This afternoon we have some more technical talks again. The next one is from Richard Sharp from the Samba team, and he will speak about seats in the kernel.
Okay.
Go on.
Good afternoon, folks. My name is Richard Sharp, and I'm a software engineer at Panasis. And what I'd like to talk to you about is putting SIDs into the kernel, and because that's one of the things that we've done at Panasis with Samba, because it's what our file system implements, or the way in which we get some information into our file system. So, firstly, what I'd like to talk to you a little bit about is our file system, which we've called PanFS. Panasis was a company that was originally formed out of a bunch of people from Carnegie Mellon University, and they have a lot of them have AFS backgrounds, but we've changed a bunch of things and built a different file system. Then I'd like to go on and talk about identities in our file system, and by identities I mean Unix UIDs and GIDs, or Windows SIDs and so on, and the fact that we store those in the file system as a union type to allow us to handle NFS users or SIFS users from clients and potentially other types of users. Then I'd like to talk about how we go about getting SIDs into the kernel, and the system call changes, etc., that we've made. What then happens in regard to permission checking, and talk briefly about how you do permission checking when a SIFS user is trying to access a file that was created by an NFS user, and vice versa. Those sorts of issues, as well as the standard sorts of issues. Look briefly at the Samba changes and talk about some of the issues that we've faced and some of the benefits that that sort of approach gives you. First up, though, I'll talk a little bit about PanFS, and to understand some of the PanFS stuff, I need to give you a little bit of a background about the file system product that we're selling. Panasis is selling a file system product that is based around a base unit consisting of a 19-inch wide shelf that is 4U high, into which you slide a bunch of blades. And these blades can be made up of two different types. There are metadata blades, or metadata servers, which implement the file system functionality. So when you want to do a get adder, or when you want to do a rename, any metadata operations are handled by the metadata servers. And all of these blades run FreeBSD. And over and above the metadata servers, there are OSDs, object-based storage devices, that implement the recent T10, the recently standardized T10 object storage protocol for providing devices, disk devices, that have a higher level of abstraction in them. Over and above that, inside in a shelf, you can have one or two 16-port GigE switches that plug into the back, with 11 of the ports going to the blades, four ports being trunkable to the outside world so that we can have something like 400 to 500 megabytes a second to the shelf, and another port for connecting PCs, or for doing configuration, things of that nature, and two power supplies and a battery module inside the individual shelf. When you want a larger server, you then plug more of these together, stick a switch out front of them, and it all functions as a single unit. Inside the metadata manager, we have a structure much like this, where the metadata server is made up of FreeBSD, and on top of that we run iSCSI modules, we run our PanFS file system client that lives in there. We have NFS because FreeBSD has NFS in the kernel, and then we have modules like the file manager, the storage manager, realm manager, and a few other components running in user land, and they provide services to the PanFS client via RPC, and the metadata server talks to the OSDs via iSCSI. Now, the benefit of the approach that we're taking is that you can then take this portion, the client portion, the file system client, which my cursor is on now, and you can take it and you can stick it out on, say, a Linux machine and load a Linux file system driver into that machine and use RPCs to go and talk to the metadata server and potentially talk to the OSDs, in fact, to talk to the OSDs. And what then happens is that because once our file system operations allows the metadata server to hand back to the file system client layout information for where the devices are stored out on the OSDs, so now clients, Linux clients in particular, no longer have to go back to the metadata server when they want to read or write from files out on the OSDs that are striped across the OSDs. They can go directly to OSDs. As a result, you can get pretty much the whole bandwidth of a shelf, or approaching the whole bandwidth of a shelf, for read and write operations rather than the bandwidth of a single metadata server. And so we can, on occasion, get 320 to 400 megabytes a second to a shelf, and the system scales up from there, as you'll see with some of the information that I provide in a subsequent slide. On top of that, then, we provide a distributed file system that provides a single namespace across the whole cluster and uses a callback-based approach for cache coherency, because we heavily cache large amounts of information on metadata servers and in clients. We use callbacks to manage that and provide delegation so that other file system types running on top of our file system, like NFSv4 or SIFS, can provide oplocks or delegations. In addition, it provides a few other things like 64-bit time fields and 64-bit lengths and offsets, etc., but that's much the same as what any other operating system provides today as well. And the last feature here is that we provide RAID and mirroring on a per-file basis, so that, in fact, when you create a file, typically under PANFS, it initially starts out as mirrored across two OSDs until it reaches a size of more than 64K bytes. So the first 64K bytes is mirrored across two OSDs. Once it gets larger than 64K, it is then converted to a RAID 5 file striped across multiple OSDs, as many OSDs as you have in the system, although I think the current limit is something like 20 OSDs. And so you can stripe files across as much as 20 OSDs, and that forms the maximum file size, or that provides the limit on the maximum file size that you can provide. In addition to that, our file system provides both POSIX and some SIFS features. One of the most important, perhaps, SIFS feature that's in this file system is SIFS access control lists. Or rather, not complete SIFS access control lists, because there are some pieces missing in the access control lists, and I'll talk about those later on. But the code to translate from SIFS ACLs to PANFS ACLs is much simpler than the code to translate from SIFS ACLs to POSIX ACLs, for example. Moving on to the multiple identity types, whenever a file is created in PANFS, the system gives that file an owner and a group owner, and also allows you to give it an access control list. But the owner and group owner is a union structure that can be either POSIX identity information, UIDs or group IDs. It can be SIFS identity information. There's one thing, we have defined Kerberos as a potential type of identity information in there as well, but we're not currently using it. And there's one more that I didn't mention. We have some special Panassus or PANFS identity information as well, and we use that to implement our own everyone group, for example, and we could use that to implement a few other features as well. And this slide gives you some idea of some of the information that's held in the file system. If you are sitting on the metadata server, if you're connected to the metadata server, you can retrieve the attributes of a file with the PANFS under getAtta call on any file that's in our file system, and you get back a lot of information. You get back an object ID. That object ID has sufficient information in it to tell you which metadata server to go to get information, and which group ID, and then which object ID on the OSDs are usable to retrieve information about it. There's also some creation time, modification time, etc. information in there. But if you have a look at the primary, the owner and the primary group, it says that the owner is a UID, and it's UID 0 in this case, which happens to be root on the local metadata server, and GID 0 is the primary group. But then if you go down at the bottom, it shows an access control list on this particular file, and the first ACE in there has an identity which is a Windows group SID, and that is the domain admin's group SID or something like that. That's on that file, and then subsequent ACEs have got UIDs and GIDs on them, and PANASIS or PAN under GID, which is one of those special group types that we have, that is the special group for everyone. So there's quite a bit of extra information in the file system that we use for performing these functions. Now, PANASIS ACL consists of a list of ACEs, just like a SIFS ACL, and there are four different types of entries that are possible in there, and you can see where the people who designed this have copied it pretty much from Windows. There are allow and deny entries, audit and alarm entries, but we don't currently implement audit and alarm entries. And then there's an identity or trustee, and the identity is here is where it can be any one of several different types, including Unix UID or GID, Windows SIDs, Kerberos principles, our own special PANASIS group information that I haven't put on the slide. And then there are a bunch of permissions and inheritance. Now, we don't currently implement inheritance, which creates a few problems, but it's on our agenda to implement. When it comes to permissions, though, we have a smaller set of permissions than what Windows does. And so we have read slash list as one of the permission bits, write, execute, append, create, delete, lock, change, ACL, and take owner. But there are several other permission bits that are available under Windows, like change, like read and write of EAs, and read and write the metadata information that we don't currently implement, which causes a few minor problems when you retrieve a set of ACLs and then try and update them or remove specific bits, and we have to remove them in groups. Okay. Oh, and lastly, some performance information. Our file system architecture and the hardware that we run on allows us to provide pretty high levels of performance, as indicated on the slide. But what I'd like to go on to next, then, is to talk more about how we've done some of the things that we've done in order to allow Samba to access the additional file system information that we're keeping. Okay. So I've talked to a certain extent about some of these things. PANFS understands multiple identity and credential types, and one of the big issues with handling multiple identities and credential types is actually getting that information into the file system, especially considering that we are implementing Samba on top of a POSIX-like operating system, which is FreeBSD, because you can't use a stat call or a set add a call or things of that nature to go and change information if it's not normal Unix information. And what we'd like to be able to do then is to push Unix UIDs and GIDs into the file system, or to push Windows SIDs into the file system, or some of these PANFS special identities like the Everyone group, the Backup Operators group, those sorts of things, and possibly even Kerberos principles later on. And the way in which this is dealt with inside PANFS is that each identity is tagged with a type, which then allows the file system to be able to understand that. So, and follow after the type is the actual identity that you're interested in. It might be a group SID, but it might be a UID or a GID or so on. And so the structure then that we have inside FreeBSD in order to deal with this is that on the POSIX side, because FreeBSD already provides a standard POSIX interface, you can only push POSIX information into the file system that way. However, what we've done in order to handle a non-POSIX side is we have added ioctals into our file system VFS layer in particular, and when you want to update some of the attributes that are not provided by POSIX, then you call an ioctal which gets vectored into our file system through the VFS layer, and then the file system can deal with that additional information. So, for example, when you want to set an ACL on a file, we provide an ioctal that allows you to give it the ACL as an array of ACEs, and those will then be applied to the file system. If you want to update, one other thing that we keep in our files is three of the four DOS attribute bits, or three of the base set of four DOS attributes bits, archive, hidden, and system, and we're working on putting read-only in there as well, and you would update those by calling an ioctal that vectors into the file system to update those against the file that's carried in there. But for performing normal operations like reading or writing the file and opening the file, you would simply call the normal POSIX routines like open, read, and write for performing those functions. And so in order to then to... And a decision was taken a while ago that what would simplify things for us, rather than having Samba doing all the permission checks on all files and retrieving the ownership information and then doing a decision as to whether or not this user is allowed access to the file and walking the ACL to do all those checks, since the file system already knew about it, one of the easiest things we could do is to push those SIDs into the kernel and then allow the file system to make decisions about whether or not the person who's trying to request the file is allowed to access that particular file, perform that particular function on that file. So what we did was we added a new system call to FreeBSD called pan under set SIDs. We've actually added a total of about three system calls that deal with SIDs. One is pan set SIDs, which allows you to push a new set of SIDs into the kernel for the current process. We've also added a clean SIDs call, which allows you to remove SIDs, and we've added a list SIDs call so that you know what SIDs are in the kernel. And we've not done it in what I would consider perhaps to be the correct way, and that is you cannot have in the FreeBSD kernel the way we've done it a credential structure which is the sum of UIDs and GIDs and SIDs. So a process cannot have both a UID and a GID and SIDs in the kernel at once. It can either have Unix credentials in the kernel or it can have Windows credentials in the kernel. And so when you push a set of SIDs into the kernel, the Unix credentials become irrelevant from the point of view of our file system. And we added the ability to be able to change the SIDs in the kernel because there are occasions when you want to perform operations in Samba as different users. One example of that is when you are serving a client that's running Terminal Server. But another example that's turned out to cause us a little bit of pain as well was a lot of clients, when they go to access a share, will initially connect to IPC dollar as the anonymous user, as an anonymous user. And after connecting to IPC dollar as an anonymous user and doing some messing around, they would then do a session setup and X as the real user. And initially we had a bug in our setup which only allowed you to push one set of SIDs into the kernel, which caused all sorts of problems because the person would be known as the anonymous user and would not change to the real user. However, we fixed that up after a while. And the reality is then that we're not quite pushing SIDs into the kernel because whilst they get into the kernel through the system call, they are then pushed immediately into our file system through a VFS layer call in our file system. But it does the job for what we need to do. And this small fragment of code here gives you some idea of how you would go about doing that sort of thing. And we've built small programs like this to test what's going on. So you would define an array of pan under identity t, which is a structure that comes in one of our include files, and those would be the SIDs. Then inside the code, you would go and maybe in a for loop or something of that nature, you would create the internal representation of SIDs using some call that I've coded here as create SID, and then you would simply call the system call sys_pan_set_sids with the SID count and the number of SIDs, and from that point on, as far as our file system is concerned, this process has the identity of a Windows user now rather than a Unix user. And then the PANFS file system module has to handle permission checking in the correct way. And the way in which it does that permission checking is it walks through the ACL on a file whenever somebody wants to access a file to open it for reading or writing or both read and write, etc., then the PANFS module will walk through the ACL on the file and comparing the identity of the requester against the identity on the ACE and determine whether or not they can have access. If the identity of the caller is the same as the owner, the identity of the owner of the file, then permission checking is relatively easy. You just compare. If they're both Unix, then you just compare the permissions on the file and the permission in the ACE. If they're both Windows, then you and so the SIDs match and the SIDs match, then you compare the permission bits in the permissions portion of the ACE as well with the requested access to determine whether or not they can have access. But if they're not the same, if you have a case where a Unix user coming in via NFS is trying to access a file that was created by a SIFS user, or vice versa, a SIFS user who is trying to access a file that was created by a Unix user, then you have to perform some additional work. And at the moment, what we do is our file system module calls out to WinBindD and asks WinBindD to translate the UID and SID into names and then do a name-based comparison to determine whether or not they are the same user so that we can then determine whether or not the operation they've asked to perform is allowed. Now, in the future, we're going to convert that to using WinBindD's ID module so that we can have an ID mapping from UIDs to SIDs rather than a name-based mapping, because there are too many security problems associated with a name-based mapping. And actually, is Steve French here? Steve, I just remembered as well, we're also using WinBindD to retrieve Kerberos tickets as well, and it's not that hard to do, so it might handle some of the issues that you were referring to before. So permission checking is done in that manner. Now, one area in which we don't quite provide Windows semantics in permission checking is that because this code is handled by a module that thinks of itself as providing POSIX services, it stops checking the permissions as soon as it gets a mismatch between the requested access and the permission bits. But I'm led to believe that under Windows you should keep on checking, because it may be that you get some permissions by virtue of you being an individual user and some other permissions to satisfy the request by virtue of you being in one of the group ACE entries that are on the list as well. So it doesn't quite provide full Windows semantics as yet. Okay. Now, in order to handle all of this, so we have SIDs in the kernel and we have a bunch of other attributes in the file system that we can push in there. That meant that we had to make a few changes to Samba in order to be able to handle that. But as far as SIDs and ACLs are concerned, the changes have been relatively small. We had to replace the POSIX under ACL routine that's in Samba with our own PANFS under ACL routine, which handles the details of translating from a SIFS ACL to PANFS ACLs and mapping the Windows permission bits to our permission bits, and in there some permission bits get grouped because we only have a read bit and we don't have a read and a read EA and a read read control bit or something of that nature. We take those three bits from Windows and we map them all onto the single read permission that we have, and on the way out, if the user has read access, then we map those to the three equivalent Windows permission bits. So there's a little bit of loss of information going backwards and forwards, but we have worked fairly hard to make sure that if you go around and around in this translation process, that you don't start losing bits totally. The other thing we had to modify was the sec under ctx.c routine. And because we think that changing of, under some circumstances, changing the SIDs in the kernel will be reasonably frequent, what we do is we track in Samba what SIDs or what NT token. In fact, what we do is we push essentially the whole NT token into the kernel, and we track what NT token is currently in the kernel. And when the one of the routines that is implemented in sec under CTX, and I've forgotten the name of the routine, but there's a fundamental routine which goes tries to change the current UID that you're using. It's handed an NT token. When that is called, we compare the NT token we've been given to what's currently in the kernel, and if they're the same, then we don't push a new set of SIDs into the kernel to avoid performing that operation. However, if we've been given a different set, then we will push a new set of SIDs into the kernel, push that NT token into the kernel. And there are a couple of occasions where we actually have to recover root access. And so on the routine, which allows you to go back to being root, we clean out the SIDs from the kernel so that this process now looks like it's a root process. Because in our environment, administrator is not the same as root on the NAS server. Administrator is a privileged user, but is not the same as root. A bunch of other changes that we have to make as well, and many of these will be isolated to the VFS, and in particular, Jeremy's recent changes to pick up storing DOS attributes in EAs will make our life a lot easier because we'll be able to isolate the changes to that part of the code. In these places, we will use ioctls to push the information we need into the file system. So 64-bit times and 64-bit attributes, for example, will be pushed in using ioctls. And we use ioctls to set and get access control lists. And we use ioctls to store and retrieve DOS attributes. And similarly, later on, when we have some inheritance implemented, which we will implement in extended attributes in our file system so that our file system guys can concentrate on doing other things, we will also use ioctls to push inheritance bits into individual files as well. Now, some of the benefits that you gain then from performing these sorts of operations are you get semantics that are closer to Windows semantics, but in an operating system that provides a POSIX, generally provides a POSIX interface. And as I mentioned before, we're using FreeBSD, and sometimes if you only have a POSIX interface, then you have to make a lot of compromises, and you can't quite get all the way to POSIX ACLs, or you have to have extended attributes and a bunch of other functionality in your file system. And we get a reduction, I guess, in the Samba code, and more importantly, a reduction in some of the modifications that we have to make. And we also believe we get some performance improvements, especially in the handling of access control lists in the kernel, rather than having to enforce those decisions out in user land and go through enforcement operations that the kernel will also go through as well. Although recently we ran into a small problem. And that is, if you have, in our file system, if a file has no ACLs at all on it, then an ordinary user trying to open the file can't open the file because the file system says there are no ACLs here, so therefore you have no permission to access the file. And what we found was that some Windows users will try anything, and in particular they'll try removing all ACEs from the ACL. And our file system would, and our implementation of Samba would happily do that for them and store a zero-length ACL on the file. And then they came and complained that now, even though they were the owner, they couldn't put an ACL back on the file. And the reason they couldn't put an ACL back on the file was that the version of FreeBSD we were using didn't have two system calls that are in Linux at the moment, which is set file ACL and get file ACL, which allows you to set an ACL just using a file name or get an ACL just using a file name. And our implementation involved opening the file and then calling an ioctl with the FD that you got back. And of course, the file system wasn't allowing that particular user to open the file. So we'll have to step back to becoming root, opening the file as root, as long as that user is the owner. And then until we get these particular system calls, the set file ACL and get file ACL, we'll have to use this more cumbersome approach, which involves more checking out in the kernel, out in Samba as well. And I guess that's... So some of the other problems that we have at the moment are no inheritance, so we have to kind of implement a funny form of inheritance, but we don't get anywhere near normal Windows inheritance. And in any case, we weren't planning on implementing dynamic inheritance, only a static form of inheritance. We don't have quite the full Windows permission bits, but it seems like you don't really need all of those in any case. However, people do get confused when some of the bits that show up in the advanced dialog boxes don't behave the way that they expect. And, of course, we have to worry about regressions in functionality, because no longer do we have to only test the Samba code, we also have to test to make sure that the in-kernel stuff is working properly as well. But that's a matter of using regression tests and the regression test library that we've got. Comparable systems, actually, I guess this is not related to Samba at all. A system that is comparable to our file system out there is a system called Lustre from the folks at Cluster FS, and most of these references here have to do with the more implementation-based things that we've done in our file system. So the T10 standard that the OSDs implement, for example, is expressed out there in that... that file location and so on, and there's a bunch of other attributes which may not show up all that well on the screen there, I'm just noticing, but there's some documents out there that look at what we the file system that we've implemented. Okay, that's the end of my talk there then. Does anybody have any questions? Because I'm more than happy to answer questions. And if nobody has any questions, then I get away scot-free.
Okay, then thanks a lot for your talk. No questions at all?
Yes. Okay, so that's an embarrassing question to ask at the moment, because locking is something that we're in the middle of implementing right at the moment, and most of our customers haven't been to date concerned about those locking issues. In about 6 weeks' time, because I'm involved with implementing our locking, with doing our locking implementation, and it's focused on SIFS initially, and we're not worried about LockF and the POSIX locking. So in about 6 weeks' time, I'll be able to tell you the answer to that question. But I can't today. No other questions? Well, that's great. Thank you for being an attentive audience.